Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show. I'm your host, John Dunford. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1329, we feature three stories by new Life Rattle writer, Cal McQuay. Cal Moindaut McQuay was born in 1992 in Sudan, now called South Sudan, in the middle of the Second Sudanese Civil War. His family fled to Kenya in the same year. Cal grew up in Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya and attended school in Eldoret. After graduating from high school, he earned a World University Service of Canada scholarship. Cal worked as a high school student in the camp for 2 years before coming to Canada in 2013. Cal McQuay lives in Toronto and studies computer science at university and is still trying to figure out what to pursue. The writing of Cal McQuay perfectly captures the conflicted feelings of a young teenage boy, especially when it comes to those first awkward attempts at making a romantic connection with a girl. Through straightforward storytelling and terrific turns of phrase, Cal was able to connect the particular to the universal, such as the self-conscious, sometimes inartful, first encounters with a prospective partner most humans experience. Whether we live in a house in the suburbs, an igloo in the Arctic, or in a town in Kenya. In tonight's first story, a young teenage boy has a crush on a friend's girlfriend, Najma. His friend, William, claims to be madly in love with the girl and that she is madly in love with him. But the girl's flirtations with the narrator indicate the latter may not be so true. Let's listen now as Cal McQuay reads his story, My Friend's Girlfriend, tonight on Life Rattle.
My Friend's Girlfriend by Cal McQuay. William stares at the black gate leading to the house where Najma lives. A swarm of boys wait by a ditch next to the house, hoping to catch a glimpse of her. Najma draws boys to her like iron to a magnet. She's only 14 years old, and her breasts look full and ripe. Are you sure she's coming? I ask William. She said at 6, he responds. William glances at his watch. He folds his arms and resumes gazing at the gate. He adjusts his hood to cover his ears and then refolds his arms. Eldoret, Kenya can get very cold. I have been friends with William for the past 4 years, since leaving Kakuma refugee camp, where I grew up after my family fled the Sudanese Civil War the same year I was born. My mother, siblings and other extended family members moved to Eldoret and into the same neighborhood as William. We both attend Kapsoya Primary School. Najma does too. William may be only 15, but his height intimidates guys even older than him. I envy his baby face. He claims his bloodshot eyes and shaggy hair attracts girls to him. The black gate finally creaks open. Najma steps out. She looks around and settles her eyes on us. Najma moves towards us, her curvy hips swinging left and right. I blush at the sight. William breaks into a broad smile. His eyes remain focused on Najma. Stop looking at me like that, she tells him. I might fall. Najma smiles and reveals white teeth. I like her smile. I like the dimples on her cheeks when she smiles. I smile back. Najma places her arms around William. They hug for a while. I look away. You feel so good, I hear William say to Najma. She chuckles and then disentangles herself from William's embrace. Najma steps towards me. I extend my hand and avoid eye contact. She ignores my hand. Najma wraps her arms around me and holds me tight. Her long dark hair smells sweet. Our cheeks touch. Her chest feels soft against mine. I try not to think about it. I place my hands on her back. William watches me closely, following my hands to make sure they don't touch the wrong places. Najma ends the hug and pulls away. I feel empty. "So you brought the kid with you," Najma says to William and winks at him. She's only a month older than me, yet she calls me kid. I hate it when she calls me kid. "He's like a little brother," William responds. "He is the only guy I trust." William and Najma both stare at me. Najma smiles. I blush again. William loves Najma. He plans to marry her. William says Najma loves him. The previous week, Najma and her two girlfriends visited me at my house. Najma wanted to borrow some movies. I said I didn't have any. They left and returned a few minutes later. "Can I borrow your English textbook?" Najma asked. "I haven't done my assignment yet." I tried to imagine how she lost her textbook. I had seen her with it at school earlier in the day. I retrieved the English textbook and handed it to her. She left. About an hour later, Najma returned the textbook. She was alone this time. "Thank you so much," she said. "You are very kind." I blushed. "Would you like to go over the exercises with me?" Najma asked. I found some questions pretty challenging. "Sure," I mumbled. I led Najma to the sitting room. No one was there. My siblings were out playing. Ma was in her room. "Nice decoration," Najma said. I smiled. We sat down at the dining room table. Najma inched closer to me. Our shoulders briefly touched. We exchanged awkward glances every time our knees knocked. "Why are you so bright?" Najma said after we completed the exercise. I blushed. "Oh, I like your cute little dimple," she said. I blushed again. "Really?" "Yeah," she whispered. We stared into each other's eyes for a while. My hands began to sweat. Her face glowed under the bulb light. She looked beautiful. Very beautiful. I was glad when Najma stood up to leave. I escorted her to our gate and watched her swing her hips as she walked away. "I like your dimples too," I said to myself. I dreamt about her that night. "I love cow," William tells Najma as we stand outside her gate. "He is a great guy. All the girls tend to fall for him." "Yeah, he has a cute little dimple face," Najma says. I blush. "Cute? Hey, I'm the boyfriend here." He waves his hands. "Cute? You never call me that." "Fuck you," Najma says. They laugh. I look away. Najma notices my restlessness and stops laughing. She glances down at her shoes. William looks at me and smiles. "Don't say the F word when Cow is around," William says to Najma. "He's a little church boy." Najma smiles and then looks in the direction of her house in the Kapsoya estate, where the well-off in Eldoret live. "I have to go," she suddenly says. "My dad is home today." Najma doesn't want her father to see her with a boy, especially a non-Muslim. I'll see you tomorrow at school, Najma says and hugs William. She turns to me. This time I reach out, hold her tight and close my eyes. Bye, she says. Najma looks at us as she walks backwards for a while, then turns around. William and I glue our eyes to her rear. She is my friend's girlfriend, I whisper and close my eyes. What? Says William. Nothing, I say.
That was My Friend's Girlfriend, written and read by Cal McQuay. The narrator in tonight's second story, now a little older but still a teenager, sits with two male friends, Brian and Kiba, on a hill outside their school, admiring a girl sitting at the bottom. One friend, who is always allowed to be the first to approach a new girl, on this day reluctantly cedes the way to our narrator, whose introduction turns rather awkward. Let's listen now as Cal McQuay reads his story, Binti Kiziwi.
Binti Kiziwi by Cal McQuay. I sit between Brian and Kibe on the side of a hill beside the soccer field at Segera SDS Secondary School, our backs facing the school huts. We gaze at the Cherangani hills of Kenya and talk about anything and everything during our morning break. I can tell the distance to the Cherangani hills from the school, Kibe boasts. I bet you can't, Brian teases. I chuckle. Serious, Kibe says. The hills are about 3 kilometers from. No way, Brian shouts. Man, I don't know who taught you math. Brian laughs and I join in. Sine theta taught him, I say. Sine theta is the nickname given to our math teacher, Mr. Sang. And he taught you math too, Brian. Brian shakes his head. Really? Kibe frowns. Be my guest then and tell us what you think the distance is, Mr. Know-it-all, he says. Brian lies on his back and laughs. Kibe looks away, then plucks a blade of grass, sticks it in his mouth, and chews on it. I turn sideways a little and see students in green sweaters standing in front of the classrooms. The girls wear forest green skirts and the boys black trousers. Other students sit nearby, on either side of us, on higher ground. Two boys get up and run down the incline to the dormitories beside the soccer field. A tall and curvy girl, making her way down the hill, walks in front of us. Brian sits up and we turn to watch her. The perfect model, I think. I look at Brian. His eyes remain on the girl. I look at Kibe. He still stares at the Cherangani hills, chewing on the blade of grass. I turn back to Brian. Do you know her? I ask. Let's find out. Brian makes to stand. I hold him back. What? He says. Wait, I say. I look back at the girl. She sits below us on the grass at the periphery of the field, her back towards us. I admire the back of her head. She must be a new student. You can go now, I say. Brian chuckles. He stands up and beats away pieces of grass from his trousers and sweater. Maybe Cow should go, Kibe suggests. What? Brian says. What? I say. Good idea, I think. Brian usually gets to go for all the beauties. It should be my turn. Let Cow go, Kibe says. Brian puts his hands in his pockets, looks at the girl, and then turns his gaze on me and smiles. He looks at his watch and reluctantly sits back down. Call me if you need help. I stand up, brush off my trousers and sweater, and look at Brian and Kibe. I sigh and tramp down the hill. I reach the girl and take a deep breath. Hey, I say and smile. She turns to look at me. I blush at the sight of her chocolate brown baby face and big chocolate brown eyes. I thought it wasn't good for a beautiful girl to sit alone. She smiles back, revealing nicely spaced, sparkling white teeth, and then looks away. A poor pickup line, I think to myself. Why did I say beautiful? Of all the words, beautiful. I could have used lovely, gorgeous, stunning, cute. My name is Cow. I sit down beside her. She looks at me. Her eyes lock. I smile. Silence. She looks away at the Charangani hills. I follow her gaze. Aren't the hills beautiful? I say. She grins. Beautiful? Again? Magnificent would have been a better word. I turn my head and look back up at Brian and Kibe. Brian says something to Kibe. They laugh. I wonder if they can hear us. I hope not. So what's your name? I ask. Silence. It must be a beautiful, lovely name. She covers her mouth with her right palm and turns her head to look at a nearby group of girls standing and chatting. Silence. I look up at Brian and Kibe again and smile in an attempt to show that all is well and under control. Do you speak English? I ask the girl. She turns her head from the group of girls towards the Charangani Hills. Unaongea Kiingereza? I repeat the question in Swahili. More silence. I look at her face and see annoying arrogance in place of the once alluring baby face. Her innocent eyes now look dark and evil. You must be a new student, I say more to myself than to her. The bell rings. Time for class. I silently thank God for the bell. Nice to meet you, I say and stand up to leave. I run towards Brian and Kibe. What's her name? Brian yells. Binti Kiziwi, I shout back. Brian and Kibe laugh. Binti is Swahili for daughter, often used in front of a girl's name to represent Miss. And Kiziwi is Swahili word for deaf. Hey, I hear a voice behind me. I turn and see the girl walking towards me. What did you just call me? She asks. I smile. My turn to remain silent.
That was Binti Kiziwi, written and read by Cal McQuay. In tonight's final story, a young man is conflicted about helping his cousin Deng, who he calls brother, sneak back into their home after a night out drinking and abetting his increasingly out of control behavior. But the cousin's latest stunt involving a phone belonging to Luel, brother of his older sister's husband, brings matters to a violent head. Let's listen now as Cao Ma Kui reads his story, Troublemaker.
Troublemaker by Cao Ma Kui. Brother, Deng says as he opens the door to my room. I raise my head from The Merchant of Venice. We lock eyes. What's the favor? I say. Deng laughs and sits down beside me on the bed. I lie with my back against the wall and my legs stretched out. The book sits on my lap. Brother, you know you are the only person who I trust in this house, Deng says. I chuckle. Deng laughs. He rakes his fingers through his shaggy hair and then attempts to make a stern face. Serious. Okay, Deng. What's the favor? I'm going out, brother. I won't be back soon. And you want me to open the door for you tonight and let you back in? Deng smiles and places his left leg on the bed, prepared to give a long explanation. It's okay, man, I say and stop him. Just know that it is not good to stay out late at night. Deng smiles and stands up to leave. Green underwear show above his sagging trousers. And playing pool with drunkards and thieves is not very good for your image, I add. Deng says nothing in response. He leaves my room and closes the door behind him. I shake my head and smirk. I feel bad for helping my cousin. I know that he drinks. He smells of liquor every night when I open the door for him. Only the other day, a man visited the house claiming that Deng owed him money. His teacher threw him out of class because Deng had not paid the tuition fees. Ma has sworn to never give Deng money again. She's so frustrated that she has stopped complaining about him. I turn my attention back to the Merchant of Venice. And she is fair, and fairer than that word. I jot down Shakespeare's line. I'll tell it to Rebecca. She won't know what hit her. I smile at the thought. Rebecca is 6 feet tall and lives next door. She has smooth dark skin, a round face with small lips and tiny nose, and milk white teeth. Rebecca is my idea of a fairy tale princess. My cell phone vibrates. Hey, buddy. Hey, I reply to Rita's text. How are you? Cow, Mark calls from the kitchen. I place a pen between the pages and close the book. I climb out of my bed and make my way to the kitchen opposite my room. Ma sits on a stool and stirs okra in a sufuria cooking pot on a charcoal stove. She raises her head to look at me. Son, I don't know what to do with your brother. Ma bites her lower lip and shakes her head. He took Lual's phone and, I don't know, he took it with him to play pool and the phone was taken by his thug friend. What? Deng has gone too far. Lual, the brother to my oldest sister's husband, will not take this lightly. Lual has gone to look for Deng, Ma says. He is going to fight him. I run towards the veranda to get my shoes. I pass through the sitting room and see Abismo de Passion on the TV. Adao, my youngest sister, loves soap operas. Erika, her 4-year-old daughter, giggles on the sofa next to her. The wall clock reads 8:30. Kapony, Erika calls to me. Although Sudanese culture requires children to address their elders with respect, my niece always calls me by my nickname Kapony. I ignore Erika and open the door to the veranda. I retrieve my shoes and return to the sitting room. I sit on the edge of the sofa by the door and put on my shoes. Kapony, Erika shouts. She covers her mouth with her hands and giggles. Estefania and Gabino kissed. Shut up, kid, I say and chuckle. And I am your uncle, not your baby friend. I finish tying my shoes and stand up. And stop watching soap operas for goodness sake, I say. Go get your brother, son, Ma says from the kitchen. I feel a cold breeze on my cheeks as I trudge to Konandogo a marketplace in Eldoret, Kenya, to look for Deng. The night looks dull, without stars, and no light from the moon. I stumble on a few stones. I recall Deng often telling me to eat a lot of carrots for my sight. I laugh at him, but deep down I know I should do something about my night blindness. I press the OK button to unlock my cell phone. I have 3 new messages. I'm good. You? Ask a friend, Rita. Hi, writes Anissa, a cute Somali girl. Hola, como esta? Jackie, a Kenyan girl learning Spanish, asked me how I am. I don't respond and put the phone in the pocket of my hoodie. When I reach the marketplace, I don't find either Deng or Lual in any of the pool halls. I check the bars and ask a couple of people who know Deng. They say they saw Deng and Lual together a while ago. Were they fighting? I ask. They were arguing over something, Matok says. No one recalls seeing Deng and Lual leave. I walk around Konandogo for a while and then decide to go back home. I take a different route, hoping I might get lucky and find them along the way. I fear for Deng. He is no match for Lual. Yet something must be done. Deng talks too much and doesn't like being told what to do. He gets angry when Mars calls him. And now he's lost Lual's phone. I'm near home when I hear voices from over a hill. I see figures as I run towards the voices. I get closer and see Lual sitting on Deng's chest and punching him in the face. I pull Lual away. Kapon, leave me, Lual says. No, Lual, I reply. I'm not letting go. Deng gets to his feet, his fists clenched. Come, you coward, he shouts. You fight like a woman. Wrestling is for women. Box like a man. Kapon, let me teach this stupid boy a lesson, Lual says and tries to fight me off. I tighten my grip. Brother, let him come, Deng says. He can't do nothing to me. He fights like a woman. Shut up, Deng, I snap. You owe Lual an apology. You should be ashamed of what you did. What is wrong with you? My heart beats fast. I am furious. I respect you, bro, I say. Honestly, I do. But I don't know you anymore. The Deng I know wouldn't do this. Silence. Go get Lual's phone, I tell Deng. This ends now. Surprisingly, Deng obeys. He turns towards Konandogo. I walk home with Lual. A few weeks later, Deng trades Adao's phone at the pool hall when he loses a game and has no money to pay.
That was Troublemaker, written and read by Cal McQuay. This concludes Life Rattle number 1329. My name is John Dunford. Lori Callis recorded Cal reading his stories. Life Rattle was created by Arnie Ackman and Guy Allen. Be sure to tune in next week for more new stories.